Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Kuraitis. Today is Tuesday, November 17th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's podcast, The Zombie Economy. We've been talking about it here for a long time, the economy of the living dead. So we're just going to have a little bit more of an in-depth discussion on what this means, what a zombie economy looks like. Well, you're in the midst of one. What a zombie company is, definitionally. We're going to go to Investopedia for this, a very common financial website. I'm sure many of you are aware of this, but investopedia.com, and the same definition applies across the board on different sites. And this is a term. This is a legitimate term that is used within the industry. This is the economy of the living dead. This is tens of billions, if not hundreds of billions, perhaps maybe trillions. We don't know the exact number of malinvestment that exists within the economy. Now, I guess if you were to make it the global economy, that easily, in my opinion, would be trillions of dollars of malinvestment. And that is a huge number to wrap your mind around. And what federal governments and central banks have been doing over the past several months, and quite honestly, over the past several years, really since the great financial crisis, which we've been talking about here for the past couple of days, which makes this a nice segue into the zombie economy right now, is they're not allowing these malinvestments to flush themselves out. That's what would happen in a market economy. But we don't have a market economy. Don't ever let them fool you. Don't ever let them trick you into believing that this is free market capitalism here in the United States, because it's not. That's not what we have. It's not what we've been running on for a very, very long time, especially over the past 12 years since the great financial crisis, since quantitative easing, massive expansion of the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, the purchasing of mortgage-backed securities. A decade ago, it was just residential. Now they're getting into commercial paper, mortgage-backed securities, corporate debt, junk bonds. They're getting to everything. Soon they'll be buying equities. And the argument could be made now that they already are through a proxy. And right now that proxy would be BlackRock, one of the largest wealth management firms in the world. This is stifling growth. It's stifling investment. It's stifling innovation. And instead of allowing the market to correct itself, which is what it would be a correction, but because they have blown this bubble to epic proportions, the correction is going to be destructive and devastating. Although this would sort of be creative destruction, if you will. That's what it's supposed to bring. You learn your lesson. But these jokers and idiots at the helm, they don't want any responsibility. They don't want to take any accountability. So let's just keep kicking the can down the road. Let's expand the balance sheet. Let's beg, borrow, and print our way out of this. Even though that's the problem. That's what's gotten us into the zombie economy. And this is global. This isn't just here to the United States. Japan has been feeling this for the past 30 years, which is why I highlighted the other day that the Japanese stock market is back to 1991 levels. It's almost 30 years ago. That's how long it's taken their stock market just to get back to that level. And they still have a long way to go to get back to their all-time highs in 1989. To me, this is going to be the same thing that takes place in Europe and here in the United States. This is becoming the Japanification, if you will, and many of you are familiar with that term. If you watch and listen to the financial media, the Japanification of the global economy, which just means it's just a debt binge. Just keep throwing more debt at these companies, allow the malinvestments to build up, and don't worry about a thing. But that is not good for society. It's not good for the economy. It's not good politically. And again, these are one of the things that are leading to all of this type of decay and decline in this country and in others. This is not how it's supposed to be. But let's get some of the market performance out of the way, and then we'll do a deeper dive into the zombie economy and then some wealth inequality numbers as well. And I'm going to go over some GDP figures as well, too. So with respect to the dollar index, continuing its decline, 92.3, not too much lower than yesterday at yesterday's podcast, but nonetheless, still a decline. No major volatility across any of the major pairs, so we'll continue making our way across. Here we have the U.S. indexes. This was a sell-off today in the markets, nothing drastic, but when we have, you know, Vaccine Monday yesterday with Moderna coming out 94.5% effective. Again, they're getting very precise here. Last Monday, it was Pfizer at 90% effective. Yesterday, Moderna, 94.5% effective, which is quite, you know, remarkable if you think about it, because the typical flu shot is 50 to 60% effective. And we've been dealing with the flu for a lot longer. Now, of course, it's different strains, but, you know, that's quite remarkable, that difference, if you really sit and think about it. And then also when you think about how the CEOs and executives of these corporations, Pfizer and Moderna, have been selling off their stock. That doesn't make any sense, does it? They have something that is going to rid the world of this global pandemic. Hundreds of millions, maybe billions of people are going to take this product. The government's going to pay for it. And they're selling their stock to get a few million dollars. That just doesn't make sense to me. Maybe they know something that we don't know. Just a thought. So a little bit of a sell-off. Overnight futures trading Dow Jones Industrial Average is down about 0.33%. The S&P 500 is down 0.25%. NASDAQ 100 is down about 0.2%. Cash trade in Japan is also in the red, giving back 280 points, representing a decline of about 1%. A mixed bag across the pond in Europe. Some red, some green. Nothing drastic. Cash trade in Australia is currently trading in the green, up 0.5%. Yesterday, we talked about Tesla being inducted into the S&P 500, if you will. That was going to take place. Of course, the shares rallied today, gaining 33 points, up 8.2%. It didn't really carry the market with it. And today, you had some testimony from some of these tech giants talking about censorship on Capitol Hill. That's going to be another story, another podcast for another day. People get heated. They have their take on this. Look, this is just part of the social media dilemma. Okay? This is just part of the social problems. They've opened Pandora's box, and everything that's been released is not going back in. It's just that simple. Politicians can cry foul that it's censorship, that they're picking on Republicans, that they're picking on... It doesn't matter. People are going to get sucked into their silos, and they're going to get deeper and deeper into them. That's it. I've talked about this. This is getting extremely dangerous. Very destructive. Because you're going to have people, and it's already in the works, it's already happening, they're already here. But you have other platforms that are catering to people's political beliefs. So that's just where they're going to go. They're never going to have robust debate. It's going to be an echo chamber. They're going to circulate the same arguments. They're going to circulate the same articles, the same videos, any type of other media that they're all flocking to. This is on the left and the right. This is going to create further division, further divisiveness. And to me, this is as clear as day. And of course, those who advocate for going on to these other platforms have a stake in doing so because it's their content that's going to be circulated. This is very easy to see. This is just further divide and conquer. And making everything political, in my opinion, is destructive as well. And that's what's going on here. You can talk about so many things under the sun on Twitter and Facebook, but it's the political stuff that gets all the attention. And it's extremely unhealthy, and that should be readily apparent to anybody who's paying attention. On the commodity front, we have WTI trading down slightly at $41.31. Brent also down slightly at $43.70. $0.02 a barrel. Natural gas at $2.69. Gold and silver both relatively flat. Gold is trading at $1,878 an ounce. Silver is at $24.47 an ounce. Nonetheless, still holding steady on the back of that vaccine Monday news. Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note is yielding 0.84%. So to me, this is again in the wrong direction, right? Given the narrative, as we mentioned yesterday, the bond market didn't seem to be buying the Moderna news. People should have been selling off their bonds, selling off their notes, selling off their T-bills. Don't need them. It's boomtown. We have two vaccines. 90% effective, 94.5% effective. Why do I need the security, quote-unquote security, of a treasury? I don't. Should have been selling them. Prices go down, yields go up. That's not what happened. It's not what happened. Now we have yields going down, which means there's buying. Why? This does not fit the narrative. Is the bond market sniffing something out that the stock market's quite not sure about? Now, understand this. Both markets are busted. They're both broken. It's too much manipulation. It's too much fraud. Too much rigging. Readily apparent. Something to pay attention to. Because the bond market usually sniffs it out. It's got the better BS detector. Stock market's much more volatile, much more emotional. And it's also the smaller market. Now, so that's some of the market performance. According to Deutsche Bank, and if somebody is going to understand what a zombie corporation is, zombie company is, it's Deutsche Bank. Now, according to Deutsche Bank, 18% of U.S. companies can be classified as zombies. 18%. A couple years ago, about 12%. Now we're at 18%. On a percentage basis, that's huge. That's huge. That's a 50% increase from only 2 years ago. And this is going to get worse. And this is from Deutsche Bank back in June of this year. With all the shenanigans taking place in Washington, D.C., with the fiscal spending, with the monetary policy from the Federal Reserve, it's creating more zombies. It's keeping them alive. Very unhealthy. Here's the definition again from Investopedia. Zombies are companies that earn just enough money to continue operating and service debt, but are unable to pay off their debt. Such companies, given that they just scrape by meeting overhead, such as wages, rent, interest payments on debt, have no excess capital to invest to spur growth. Zombie companies are typically subject to higher borrowing costs because they're riskier. It may be one just event, a market disruption, or a poor quarter performance away from insolvency or a bailout. Zombies are especially dependent on banks for financing, which is fundamentally their life support. Zombie companies are also known as the living dead or zombie stocks. This is from Investopedia. This is legit, okay? Zombies. This is what they are actually known as. This is the economy of the living dead. One, market disruption. One, poor quarter of performance. Bankruptcy, insolvency, bailout. Waiting in the wings. Because this is what the Nobody Cares Act has done. This is what the Federal Reserve's emergency facilities have done. They have kept these companies alive. Okay, this article from Investopedia continues. Zombies often fail. Well, what a surprise. Falling victim to the high cost associated with debt or certain operations, such as research and development. They may lack the resources for capital investment, which would create growth. If a zombie company employed so many people that its failure would become a political issue, it may be deemed too big to fail, as was the case with many financial institutions during the 2008 financial crisis. And what happened with those two big-to-fail firms, those banks? Oh, that's right, they made them even bigger. given that many analysts expect that zombies will eventually be unable to meet their financial obligations. Such companies are considered riskier investments and will therefore see their share prices suppressed. Not in this environment. Of course, if you're bankrupt, the Robinhood day traders, they love it. They love bankruptcy. They love bankruptcy. Remember what happened to Hertz? Remember what happened to Kodak? Unbelievable. Now, of course, if you timed it right, you could have made a lot of money, but most likely you didn't. Unbelievable, the environment we find ourselves in. Zombies were first spoken of in reference to companies in Japan during the country's lost decade of the 1990s, following the bursting of its asset price bubble. That's now, of course, plural. It was a lost decade. It's now lost decades, just like it is here in the United States, just like it is in many European countries. During this period, companies were dependent on banks to back them to remain in operation, even though they were bloated, inefficient, or failing. Economists argue that the economy would have been better served by allowing such poorly performing companies to fail. I am such an economist. The term zombies was picked up again in 2008 in response to U.S. government bailouts that were part of the Troubled Asset Relief Program, which we've been discussing here for the past couple podcasts. While the ranks of zombie companies are small, 18% doesn't seem small to me, but okay, years of loose monetary policy highlighted by quantitative easing, high leverage, and historically low interest rates have contributed to their growth. Economists argue that such policies preserve inefficiencies while stifling productivity, growth, and innovation. When the market shifts, zombies will be the first to fall victim, unable to meet their basic obligations as rising interest rates make their debt more expensive to service, which is one of the reasons why these idiots are doing their best to suppress rates. They know what's waiting in the wings. This is a con game. This is smoke and mirrors. Meanwhile, successful companies, which are less able to build on their success because of tight credit, may feel any downturn more than they should. That's one of the most important statements in this article. Meanwhile, I'm going to repeat it. Meanwhile, successful companies, which are less able to build on their success because of tight credit, may feel any downturn more than they should, which I have been discussing this point for months. For months. I think the example I used were a couple of restaurants. One is managed very well, another is managed poorly. But the government comes in and just says, here's money for everybody. But the real economy is still taking a hit. This is a house of cards. This is a foundation built on sand. What should happen is that successful restaurateur would absorb that market share because his competitor is now out of business. That's what should happen. And of course, a lot of that to some degree is happening. Not every business, of course, has been saved. But a lot of them have been. And continuing with this practice most definitely stifles progress and growth and makes it worse for those who have been doing the right thing, who have been managing their companies very well. It doesn't mean that the entrepreneur, the restaurateur in this example, who did not run his restaurant well, doesn't mean he's gone for good. He can learn from this and open up shop later on. But you cannot save everybody. That's not how it works. Because from the onset of all of this, the excuse is, well, it's not their fault. This is nobody's fault. What kind of excuse is that? That's the risk of going into business. I think I've given this example before. I'm going to give it again. Well, again, we'll use a restaurateur. You got a restaurant. You're opened up. You're in a town. That town's lifeblood for its economy is a steel mill. Okay? Employs thousands and thousands of people. Well-paying jobs. That steel mill moves. Or it downsizes because it wants to diversify its geographic footprint. Whatever the reason. That steel mill downsizing or moving Well, that's not the fault of the restaurateur either. Does that mean that the government has to come in to subsidize the revenues of that restaurant and so many other businesses that were surviving and perhaps thriving because of that steel mill? That's not how it works. And you can take that example across the board. A hurricane, a flood, a tornado, anything. Not your fault. But those people go out of business all the time. Steel mill goes away, it's a ghost town. Where is the government? Where's the taxpayer coming in to the rescue to bail out all of these businesses? Don't be fooled by this just because it's the politician you want to hear saying it. Unbelievable. Use your head. Think. Continuing here real briefly. While keeping zombies on life support may preserve jobs, economists note that using such resources is misguided because it impedes growth at successful firms and therefore inhibits job creation. Exactly. Exactly. The successful firms have a proven business model. It works. They're going to acquire that market share. That means they're going to hire more people because they have more market share. They have more business. And those employees are now going to get better insight as to how to run a better business, which is an intangible, which would take you to an argument that would relate to minimum wage, for example. Because one of the things involved, obviously, in minimum wage, if you're getting paid minimum wage, is because, well, your skill, you just don't have that many skills. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to perform whatever it is you're doing. And that's okay. But you're acquiring skills. And if you're working for a successful entrepreneur, a successful corporation, and if you're observant and if you pay attention, you might pick up on some of the best practices in that industry, which is an intangible. It can make you a better business person, a better employee, a better entrepreneur if you want to go out on your own venture. But if you're working for somebody where it's constant mayhem and inefficiency, well, you're really not gaining anything except learning what not to do, which can also be valuable. But you should really be learning best practices. And as long as the government continues to get in and interfere and pick winners and losers and try to make everybody happy and preserve as many jobs as possible, this is what's going to continue to happen. It's going to be anemic growth. And when it's done through begging, borrowing, and printing, and spending money that we don't have, it's going to come at the cost of a lot of political and social strife and a lot of tension. And that's a good segue right now into wealth inequality. So, if you're looking at the total net worth held by the top 1%, okay? Total net worth held by the top 1%, we're at $34.2 trillion. $34.2 trillion, top 1%. If you look at the bottom 50% total net worth, $2 trillion. $34 trillion for the top 1%. For the bottom 50%, $2 trillion. 17 times gap right there. Now, this is data I'm looking at going back to 1989. All right, let's go back. Let's go back in history and look at where we were 1989. For the top 1%, $4.8 trillion. For the bottom 50%, $760 billion. Still a gap. There's always a gap. But that's a difference of about 6 times. Now we're at a difference of 17 times. That's huge. This isn't because of any type of massive, explosive economic growth. This is because of the Alan Greenspan put, the Greenspan put, former chairman of the Federal Reserve. Anytime the market slipped, oh, here comes the Federal Reserve and Alan Greenspan to the rescue. Ben Bernanke picked up the same shenanigans. Great financial crisis, quantitative easing. Quantitative easing number one, number two, Operation Twist, QE3. I don't know what number QE we're on now. But they're not stopping. And Jay Powell, current chairman of the Fed, was out again today. We're going to do whatever it takes. We really need more fiscal spending. Same song and dance we've been listening to here for months. They know the game is over. But this wealth inequality is ridiculous. If you look at the time frame, again, 1989 to today, quarterly data, for the top 1%, you're seeing an increase of some 613%. Massive. Over a 30-year time period. For the bottom 50%, a gain of 176%. So top 1%, 613%. Bottom 50, 176%. The line for the bottom 50%, it's basically a flat line. It's basically a flat line. Bottomed out in 2011, 2010, 2011, and has been inching up higher since. And of course, folks, a lot of this is because of the printing press. This is because of financial asset price inflation. This is the stock market, primarily, and other financial assets, of course. But I just think that that is very, very striking to see this. And I don't like making these arguments when it comes to class welfare. But this isn't a free market, capitalistic society or economy. This is fascism. This is socialism. This is what this country has been dealing with for a very long time. This is why we are in decay. This is why we are in decline. And there is no leadership. There is nobody bringing these things up in the public domain on the scale in which it needs to be heard. You're not going to hear this from the White House, the current one, or the incoming administration. You're not going to hear this from anybody on Capitol Hill. You're most definitely not going to hear this from anybody on Wall Street. You're not going to hear this on Fox or CNN or MSNBC. You're not going to hear it on CNBC, Fox Business, or Bloomberg. Maybe every once in a while you'll get somebody in the midst in an interview that might be that contrarian investor, or somebody says, yeah, we might have to take a step back, take a deep breath, see what's going on here. Maybe that's, you know, 1 out of 10, 1 out of 20 interviews that you're going to hear, if you ever hear it. This is going to cause problems. It already is. To me, it's very evident, perfectly clear, like the analogy I gave yesterday. Most people, you know, don't like wearing the mask. That's fine. It's a pandemic. You see them. Very easy to see. It's on your face. It's on your neighbor's face. It's on a stranger's face. You see it right in front of you. To me, so is this. The graph that I'm looking at right now, this is in my face. And I can see how it translates into what's going on in the streets. Not just in this country, around the world. Because this is the same song and dance that's taking place. If it was because of productivity gains, then this should be lifting everybody up. That's what would happen in a market economy. We have data that shows this. This is economics. This is what you learn in Econ 101. Productivity gains equates to higher wages, higher net worths, higher standards of living. This isn't brain surgery. It's basic economics. So what happened? Why the disconnect? It's because we don't have any semblance of a market economy. We don't have a sound monetary system. Those closest to the printing press are the beneficiaries. And then eventually it'll trickle down, trickle down, trickle down. And right now, again, that gap between the top 1% and the bottom 50% is 17 times. How much longer do you think this is going to be able to continue? I don't think much longer. This is when the pitchforks come out. And this is nearing an all-time high. It was higher in the fourth quarter of 2019. $34.9 trillion. And of course, then you had the massive stock market sell-off. So that's indicative. That's reflected here. That makes sense. But we're bouncing back because we threw several trillion dollars back into the system. Not growth, not productivity. Just Banana Republic printing press. That's all it was. I'm going to save real GDP for tomorrow. We're getting near that half-hour mark here. I don't want to run too much further than that. But I do want to circle back real quick to some of the zombie corporations here, because there was an article out of Bloomberg that sort of highlights this. And they titled the article, The Undead Debt. And it talks about zombie firms are sitting on an unprecedented $1.4 trillion of obligations. $1.4 trillion. Okay, well, what does that mean? All right, well, they go back to 2008, 2009. $500 billion. Maybe $600 billion. 2008, 2009. They don't give the number here. I'm looking at it. It's just the graph. I'm eyeballing it. But it's not much north of $500 billion. Now we're at $1.4 trillion. Again, billions to trillions in a decade. Don't forget this. So even if these zombie firms gave back $1 trillion, they'd still be at great financial crisis levels. You understand how destructive and devastating this is and is going to be as we continue? 18% of U.S. companies. 18%. How many jobs is that? Not just at those corporations, but across the supply chain. Again, to our example, the steel mill that pops up the restaurant and so many other small businesses and maybe larger businesses. We are far from out of the woods on this. It's because the stock market's making all-time highs and the federal government wants to tell us that inflation's low and unemployment is 6.9%. I'm not buying it. Not buying it. Like we talked about the other day on the podcast, The Myth of Economic Recovery. That's what this is. This is a myth. It's just a narrative. It's just storytelling. It's just attempting to tell the children that there are no monsters in the closet or monsters under the bed. That's all it is, trying to calm nerves. Because I honestly think that next year is going to be worse than this one. Hope I'm wrong, but the writing's on the wall. Nothing has been solved. The structural issues are continuing. Politics are just as divisive as ever, most likely going to get worse before it gets better. The vaccine and COVID-19, it all remains a hot mess. So, are we surprised that we have a zombie economy, that this is the economy of the living dead? To me, I'm not surprised. The question is, where do we go from here? Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.